You ready to go?
Oh, yeah. We still record.
Yes.
We're still doing this podcast. Minutes.
What's up? This is Movies On Up. When mom goes to work, dad goes berserk. Sitting across from me in his usual spot is a dad, Mr. Dave Bisella.
The berserk dad.
The berserker. My love for him is like a truck. That's Dave. I'm Ryan. We are Movies On Up. When mom goes to work, dad goes berserk is our tagline for this week. If you think you know what movie that comes from, send your guess to us in one of the following ways. You can email us. moviesonup@gmail.com. You can leave your guess on our Facebook page, facebook.com/moviesonup, or tweet your answer to us via the Twitter @moviesonup. If you are correct and if we choose you, we will send to you a totally berserk prize package full of all sorts of great things that your mom will approve of. Speaking of moms, this week, Bad Moms comes out in theaters. And because Dave and I didn't have a better idea, we thought, that's not a bad cast there. A lot of kind of funny ladies in there. So we were going to do our five movies from the cast of Bad Moms. Although, according to Dave, it was a little more specific than that.
Mila Kunis.
Yes.
Christina Applegate.
Absolutely.
Kristen Bell.
Yep.
And Jada Pinkett Smith. I wanted to put Katherine Hahn in there, and I almost did, but she's been in bit parts and stuff. I was trying to think of leading roles.
I never worry about that. Like,
I do.
Even if we're doing, like...
I try to narrow it down as much as possible because that's less work for me.
Like, next week, we're doing our favorite Michael Keaton movies. Not every one of my movies is a Michael Keaton starring movie.
Oh, see, I did. I did.
I didn't do
I
that.
Left the other guys off, even
never...
though it's one of my favorite Michael Keaton performances.
Well, I left it off because we talk about it a lot. But I never approach lists that way because I don't care. I think it's easier if I have more people to include because then I don't have to be like, am I really going to put a Jada Pinkett Smith movie on here?
I have two.
I put one on.
I have two.
Well, Dave, what is your number five? Is it one of the aforementioned Jada Pinkett
Smith? Oh, no,
they're
joints? Way higher.
Okay.
This one is my only Christina Applegate joint, even in Also Ran. She's had a solid career up to date so far.
The Anchorman.
She's shown up in those.
Yeah.
She showed up in Vacation. Like, she showed up in solid movies so far. But I went back to 1991, directed by Stephen Herrick. Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead, starring Christina Applegate, high off of Married with Children.
It's like her first big role out of that, wasn't it?
I believe so, yeah. This is like her first like headlining a movie thing. And there might have been a few after that. Now I'm doing research just because I don't
now
think...
Now we're doing it. It makes sense to do the research after we've started recording.
That's how
professionals do it.
That's why I narrowed it down. Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead. It's a stupid movie. It probably doesn't hold up, but considering I haven't seen it in a long ass time.
Since 1989?
91.
91,
I was 12 when this movie came out, so I saw it, you know, when I was 13 or so.
And she was hot. In that wheelhouse.
She still is.
Certainly, but I'm saying, like, at that time, if you asked a 10-year-old boy, like...
Oh, she was everything.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
I was her target demo.
Yes,
12,
exactly,
13-year-old
right.
boy. Having funny things going on. It's a dumb, dumb movie. The premise, the mom goes to Australia for 3 months. The babysitter she hires to watch her kids just dies early. So Christina Applegate cons her way into a fashion magazine or a fashion designer. She took some job.
Something.
She's like a high school kid. And then Josh Charles is the romantic lead, which is odd enough in its own thing. It's just a dumb, dumb movie that... I loved back then. I'm afraid to watch now because I don't think I would love it now. But yeah, it's my number five.
My number five is the Katherine Hahn movie. And by calling it a Katherine Hahn movie, I am using that term loosely. It is a Paul Rudd movie. It is an Elizabeth Banks movie. Zooey Deschanel, Emily Mortimer. It's Jesse Peretz's Our Idiot Brother from 2011. It's also an Adam Scott movie. This cast was great.
Oh, that cast is awesome.
And with Paul Rudd and Adam Scott, it's shocking that this is only my fifth favorite movie on any list, let alone this one. Rashida Jones is in there as this butch lawyer. She's Zooey Deschanel's girlfriend. Coogs is in there as Emily Mortimer's philandering husband. Hahn shows up as Rudd's bitchy ex-girlfriend. I think the problem with this movie is how simple the plot and the characters are. Rudd plays this hippie kind of guy, naive fella, Ned, who goes to jail for selling weed to an undercover right at the beginning of the movie. And then pretty much proceeds to go through the rest of the movie with the same innocence slash ignorance that leads his three sisters to assume that he's in fact an idiot. We find out that all three sisters have their own problems, which, brace yourselves, are actually solved by the idiocy of their brother. I know that one was tough to see coming. There's nothing wrong with the movie. It is enjoyable.
It's not as good as it should be with that cast.
No, it's not. And the main problem I have with this movie is that it didn't quite measure up to what I think on paper is a similar movie from the same year.
I Love You, Man.
Jeff Who Lives at Home.
See, I love Jeff Who Lives at Home.
I do too.
I love that movie.
Absolutely. You've got a guy who's kind of an idiot, I guess. Very quirky at the very least. And the turns that that movie takes, it's anything but predictable. I made the mistake of seeing Jeff Who Lives at Home first.
And then Our Idiot Brother.
Yeah. And I was like, boy, this is a very color by numbers version of, and that's just not fair.
That's why I threw out I Love You, Man, because I think, yes, I Love You, Man and Our Idiot Brother are very similar.
Maybe.
Whereas the casts are fantastic. It's people that I adore.
I love Our Idiot Brother. I
enjoy them,
I really
both,
like,
but I feel like they both should have been better with what they were given. I Love You, Man, it's just, it's the anomaly. It's a movie with zero conflict. Like, there is no conflict in that movie.
No, like, life or death conflict.
No,
really.
There's Paul Rudd and Rashida Jones and, yeah, like, Tom Lennon and Andy Samberg.
Yeah.
Like, there's really good stuff in it. Same with Our Idiot Brother. It left me wanting more, I guess. Like,
fair enough. Yeah.
It's not
thing.
A bad movie.
No.
I'll watch it if it's on, but I don't have a hankering to rewatch Our Idiot Brother.
Nope.
I guess that's unfair, because I do like I Love You, Man a lot more than Our Idiot Brother.
Okay, they're, good.
Yeah. But my number four
is not I Love You, Man.
It's not I Love You, Man. It is a movie that I'm not ashamed to like. It's Ted. Ted is Coming from 2012.
For Movies on Up fame.
Yeah. Written and directed by Seth MacFarlane, kind of his burst onto the mainstream, starring Marky Mark, Seth MacFarlane, and the bad mom herself, Mila Kunis. It's just a dumb comedy. This and the second one, people rip on them because, yeah, they're just dumb movies about talking teddy bears. I think they're hilarious. I'm not a Family Guy shill. I don't watch Family Guy. I don't watch American Dad. So it's not like I'm just a McFarlane shill.
Right.
But I think the stupid jokes in these movies.
Ted made a shit ton of money.
Oh, yeah. It made over $100 million, $150 million, I think.
Yeah, for a hard R-rated comedy,
yeah,
that's the sign of a good movie. And I liked the second one. I didn't like it as much, but I still thought it was enjoyable. I still laughed.
Thinking of both of them, they both have moments that I just laugh just thinking about. The candy at the lawyer office in Ted 2 is one of my favorite jokes in a movie ever. Both times it's there, I lost my ass laughing. Ted 1, the fart in the restaurant. We're here on business. Who would do that? Like that, the Sam Jones stuff. And the second one, Sam Jones at the wedding, I just did a bunch of coke in the bathroom. You'll never guess with who. Guy just jumps out a window. Like, it's these stupid, dumb jokes that they're really heavy. Like, these movies are joke
F.
heavy.
Scott Fitzgerald.
Yeah. I wanted to put Ted 2 on the list because we've talked about Ted so much. But Mila Kunis
that
didn't.
That one's, yeah, very hard to put on the list.
Mila Kunis didn't come back. She was replaced by Amanda Seyfried. But the part Ted 2 where Patrick Warburton and Worf, or whatever his name is,
yeah,
from Star Trek, show up dressed up as the Tick and Worf. And just them the whole movie. Everything they say to each other is so funny. I like both the Ted movies. I really do. They don't really care about anything other than just joke delivery platforms. But
I think the second one does. I
it
mean,
tries.
It gets a little preachy, maybe. But, you know, I think they're funny.
Oh, they're hilarious. I think they're great. I'd watch Ted 3 before I'd watch Bad Moms 2.
Or Bad Moms 1.
Making up movies.
We're just making up sequels that don't exist.
Declarative statements.
I'd watch
no
Ted 16.
So, yeah, my number four is Ted.
Ted slash Ted 2. Ted franchise.
The Ted franchise, which did kick off with Mila Kunis.
My number four is my lone Christina Applegate movie. And calling it a Christina Applegate movie, again, is a little bit of a stretch. It is a Tim Burton movie. It's 1996's Mars Attacks, starring Jack Nicholson, Pierce Brosnan, Sarah Jessica Parker, a lot of other people and then Christina Applegate. Honestly, we said it at your number five. She's got a really solid career, and I'm not trying to demean it in any way. I just didn't want to put an Anchorman movie on there because I feel like people get those at this point. I love the first Anchorman. It's hilarious. Didn't really care for the second one, but people know about those movies. And Mars Attacks, I think, is a movie that people don't know about. I really liked Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead, and that was probably going to make my list. I had to go with this one instead. Like I mentioned, the cast is huge. You've also got really small parts from Natalie Portman, Jack Black, and the GOAT, Jim Brown, was in that movie. On the surface, if you just see this movie on a shelf somewhere, it's really easy to think that it's just a crappy alien invasion movie, but it's super subversive. It paints a really critical picture of our government, our media, and America in general, all while wearing the disguise of like the 60s style B movie. The difference being that this movie is in on the joke, and you might call a movie that is laughing at itself campy, but this movie is far too snarky to be campy. If you can get past the look of it, the crazy disintegrations, I think it's actually a really smart comedy.
I don't think I've seen this all the way through. Like, I know Mars Attacks, I know what it is, but I've seen parts, and to me it feels like an anthology movie, but I think only because I've seen so many different parts at different times that I don't know how they fit together. It seems like any time...
There's a lot going on because there's a lot of characters.
It seems like any time...
DeVito's in it. I didn't even mention
yeah,
him.
Yeah, it seems like any time I turn it on, it's at a point I've never seen before that doesn't seem to fit with anything else that I've already seen. My number three, a movie that I absolutely love. It's one of my favorite dramas of all time. I know I've mentioned it before because we did a Vince Vaughn episode, I believe. And we might not have, but if we did, I talked about this movie. It's 1998's Return to Paradise, directed by Joseph Rubin, starring Vince Vaughn, Anne Hesh, Joaquin Phoenix, David Conrad, Vera Farmiga, and Jada Pinkett Smith as MJ Major. One of my favorite. I mean, the movie is a Vince Vaughn, Anne Hesh movie. Like, it's mostly about those two, and then David Conrad is kind of the main player. But the role Jada Pinkett Smith plays is so crucial to the story, and almost a little bit ahead of its time, because this is 98, so like internet journalism wasn't that big of a thing. Vince Vaughn, Conrad, and Joaquin Phoenix are all on vacation. They buy a bunch of hash. Conrad and Vince Vaughn leave. Joaquin Phoenix gets caught with all the hash, and it's a large enough portion that he's sentenced to death unless Vince Vaughn and David Conrad will come back to the country and take responsibility for their part. Then it would just be prison and not death, because it wouldn't be such a large amount for one person. Jada Pinkett Smith is MJ Major, this journalist that just wants to be in on the story. Like, she's young, she's eager, she's ambitious. Like, this is her story. She's talking to Vince Vaughn and talking to Anne Hesh, and nobody wants to talk to her, but she's not going to let it die. And her role plays such a key part in here. Like, I tried not to do anything that was like, oh, it was a bit part, which that's just my rules, but whatever. But, like, her part's so crucial in this, even though if it does follow Anne Hesh and Vince Vaughn for most of the part, she's really good in this role because this movie's so good. Everybody's so good in this movie. Joaquin Phoenix and Vince Vaughn. This is Vince Vaughn when Vince Vaughn was an actor.
Vince Vaughniest?
No, this is pre-Vince Vaughn, Vince Vaughn. This is when Vince Vaughn was an actor and not a movie star. This is back when he actually cared about what roles he was taking. And him and Joaquin, between this and Clay Pigeons, were making awesome movies together. I really like this movie, and Jada Pinkett Smith's really, really good in it and very crucial.
I guess you could say the same thing about my number three. I really like it. She's crucial, although not in it a ton. It is a movie that, I don't know, might show up on your list again. If I have to guess that you've got two Jada Pinkett Smith movies, is one of them 2004's Collateral?
It is not.
Okay, great. So we won't have crossover. Michael Mann's joint, Tom Cruise, Jamie Foxx, and Jada Pinkett Smith. If my number five was underwhelming due to the cast and the expectations I may have had, my number three would be the exact opposite. I think somehow the general public had forgotten about Michael Mann, because I feel like this movie should have been bigger than it was in the time. It's really only 9 years after Heat, and I think about 5 years after The Insider, which were both great movies. Both got a lot of award love because they were phenomenal. Maybe it was Ali being the most recent movie, which was still good.
It was good. It just wasn't.
It didn't seem like a Michael Mann movie.
It didn't feel like a Michael Mann, yeah.
Right. So maybe that seemed a little out of place and allowed this one to fly under the radar. But if Ali didn't feel like a Michael Mann movie, this does.
This is,
yes, this is 100% a Michael Mann movie. And maybe the two leads in this might seem out of place for a Michael Mann movie at that time.
This is pre-Oscar Jamie Foxx,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Or is this right after Oscar?
This is 2004. He won the next year, 2005,
okay,
for Ray. Ray was 2004. So this was pre-Academy
right
Award
winner
Jamie
Foxx.
Right when
people were starting to take Jamie Foxx. This wasn't
right.
Bait Jamie Foxx.
No.
Which I love bait, by the way.
Jamie Foxx being a legit movie star. And this is, I mean, it's not a comedy. We're used to seeing Jamie Foxx in comedies. This and Ray were obviously drunk.
And it wasn't Tom Cruise being typical Tom Cruise.
No, he's not, spoiler alert, he's not the hero in this movie. I think that they were both very different roles for those guys, but I thought they were phenomenal in those roles. I feel like Mann did a great job with this tension that builds early on in the relationship and kind of builds between the two. Obviously a great job on his part, but also a great job between the two leads. They are both carrying the movie, and most of it takes place inside of Fox's taxi cab. So they're in very close proximity, and they do have to play off each other an awful lot. You don't spend a lot of time with Jada Pinkett. She kind of bookends the movie, but I thought her scene with Fox in the beginning is really good. It kind of sets his character up as this really great-tempered cab driver who's really trying to hustle and you know, make something of himself. But he's very personal, very friendly. He strikes up a great rapport with her, which kind of sets him up for the end to do what he ends up doing. What I love about Mann movies specifically, and I think back of Heat, how the protagonist and the antagonist are played off each other throughout most of the movie. In Heat, they don't spend a lot of time on the screen together. It's more one chasing the other. But that dynamic, you know, of the De Niro and the Pacino. Exactly. They have that brief scene.
Where it's not even together. Yeah, I guess they are one together. Yeah.
Right, before they finally sort of meet at the end. In Collateral, they're with each other pretty much the entirety of the movie, but it still feels like these two great forces. You kind of still like Cruise. I mean, he's a bad dude. He's doing bad dude things.
He's still Tom Cruise.
Right, he's still Tom Cruise, but he's still affable. Like, he still really likes Jamie Foxx's character, and he legitimately wants to be his buddy. I need you to drive me around so I can kill all these people, and if you say anything, I will kill you. But if that doesn't happen, we could probably go get drinks afterwards.
This one was on my radar just because I love Mike Mann. Michael Mann and Mike Mann.
Mike Mann, that guy's a dick.
I like Michael Mann. I really like this movie. But when we're doing lists like this, I do a little bit of a different approach because I don't think of Jada Pinkett when it comes to this movie.
No, you only think of
Tom Cruise and Jamie Foxx. Right. So I don't want to talk about just Collateral. Like, if I'm going to bring up a Jada Pinkett movie, I want to talk about Jada Pinkett in it. But I do love this movie. My number two is another Jada Pinkett movie. This is a Jada Pinkett movie. This is pre-Jada Pinkett Smith days. This goes back to 1995 to a movie that I adore to this day. I used to watch it at least once a week through high school. It's Tales from the Crypt: Demon Night, starring Jada Pinkett, Billy Zane, William Sadler, CCH Pounder, Thomas Hayden Church. It was Tales from the Crypt breaking into movies. The Crypt Keeper gives his intro, but it's not a Tales from the Crypt movie. It's a weird...
It didn't need to be.
No, how they made these movies made no sense, because the next one, the Dennis Miller one, was kind of the same thing. It didn't need to be a Tales from the Crypt movie, but it's a solid demon movie. You have William Sadler, who has this relic that Billy Zane needs. He ends up holed up in a bar with Jada Pinkett Smith, CCH Pounder, Thomas Hayden Church as Roach. You got Billy Zane as the bad demon hunting him down. This movie's a lot of fun. Like, even from 95. Yeah, the effects may not look that great now, but the deaths are good. Billy Zane is fantastic. And the times you get to say that phrase aren't that common, but I feel like when you can say Billy Zane was really good, that it's worth it, because he's really good in spots where he needs to be really good. And he's just this demon that wants this relic. And you have Jada Pinkett who's this hero, Rise. Like, she just is a barmaid and rises up to be this badass hero that has to save humanity. And it's a lot of fun. She's good in it. CCH Pounder's badass in it. It's worth watching just for his performance. He's so kind of over the top. He's just a demon and he's having fun with it. I haven't watched this movie in a while, and I regret that because I do know it holds up because I've watched it within 5 years or so. It's one of those movies that when I talk about it, I just want to watch it. Like, I have so many memories with this movie because I used to watch this movie all the time.
I feel like it used to be on HBO an awful lot.
Yeah, I had the VHS. That's how far back it goes. I think I still have the VHS. It's one of the VHS that I kept just because I have so many memories from that VHS and from that movie. That's my number two.
My number two, I guess, is maybe the first one on my list that actually stars one of the aforementioned bad moms. It's a little bit off the radar. It is a Kristen Bell jam. Also starring Sam Huntington, Christopher Marquette, Dan Fogler, Jay Baruchel. It's Kyle Newman's Fanboys from 2009. It is no secret around these parts that I love me some Star Wars. I also love me some Kristen Bell dressed as Slave Leia. Back in 2007, I was waiting in a ridiculously long line to get into a Star Wars convention in Los Angeles, and I ran across Kyle Newman. He had a petition that he was trying to get signed so that the movie could be released. That was about a good 2 years before it actually did come out. It might be the best-known Star Wars fan film, really, of all time. Certainly has the best cast. On the one hand, it's a pretty fun movie. You have a bunch of high school buddies that get together to try and steal a print of The Phantom Menace to be able to see it before it releases. Seth Rogen and William Shatner have some really, really funny cameos. Rogen's got a couple, and then when Bill Shatner shows up, it's pretty good. And you have that whole Kristen Bell thing. On the other hand, it's not as much of a fun jaunt as one of the high school friends has terminal cancer, and that's why they're trying to steal the movie so that they could see it. I kind of thought a lot about this movie last year when that story about that guy, Daniel Fleetwood, came up.
Did J.J. watch? Yeah. He screened it for him?
Yeah, that guy had some kind of cancer having to do with his spine. He died 5 days after seeing Force Awakens. And to me, it just seemed like having seen this movie and being aware of it for so long, it was kind of a really unfortunate incident of life imitating art. But there's also a great line at the end of the movie where, spoiler alert, the guy does die. They kind of tell you that throughout the whole movie. He does get to see the movie, but he's the only one of the friends that's allowed to see it first, so everybody else has to wait. And they go into the theater, and they sit down, getting ready to see a new Star Wars movie for the first time in a theater. And obviously, I found myself there in December. I think it's Huntington's character that says, "What if it sucks?" And that's the end of the movie. And that was something that certainly in 1999, nobody was thinking that. Well, turns out 10 years later, you do know that that movie did kind of suck. And that line just kept rattling through my brain as I'm sitting waiting for The Force Awakens to come off. Oh my God, what if it sucks? What if it sucks? I've been through this before. It's a fun Star Wars movie. Not that it has, you know, light. It does have lightsabers. It does have stormtroopers. It has some great cosplay. It's a fun nerd movie that's got some Star Wars, Star Trek, good old-fashioned hate.
I don't like this movie.
Because you are a Grinch.
No. This, I think, is one of the... When I think of movies that are ruined due to, like, studio involvement, this is one of the first ones that comes to mind because the movie this was supposed to be was way better than what it ended up being. There was a fight. The studio wanted cancer taken out of it completely.
Right.
The original, the script had more of that with it. Like, it was more of a dire need. In the final version, it was still there, but it wasn't as focused on. And this is one of those, I love the idea of it. I absolutely love the premise, but it was one of those that you're waiting for like 3 years for it to come out just because...
It took an awful long time.
It took a long time, and by the time it came out, maybe I was just soured on it. Maybe I look at something like Knights of Badassdom.
Yeah.
One of those where it's like, oh, I love the cast. I love the premise. If this so much had studio involvement that by the time it comes out, I just don't have interest in it.
It was certainly a victim of when it came out. I mean, not that it was going to be released in 1998 anyway, but certainly if it would have been released closer to when the trilogy was still in theaters, I think that would have been better rather than by the time 2009 rolls around, all three of them have come and gone.
Yeah.
So that was a little bit of a bummer.
It's like, I love the idea, yeah. And I love the cast, and there is good stuff in there. I don't feel like the final product was as good as it should have been. There is some really, really good stuff, but there's some really bad stuff. I don't like a lot of it. I just wanted the movie that they wanted to make, I guess. I guess I got so amped up for that movie that this was hard for me to watch. And my number one, obviously the first one that came to mind, when you look at the cast of Bad Moms, Mila Kunis, Kristen Bell. So I went to the most
the Mila Kunis, Kristen Bell movie
yeah. from 2008, Forgetting Sarah Marshall, directed by Nicholas Stoller, written by Jason Segel, starring Kristen Bell, Jason Segel, Mila Kunis, Russell Brand, Bill Hader, Jonah Hill. A bunch of people show up in it. You know, you have a love triangle movie where Kristen Bell and Mila Kunis are two tips of that triangle. So it's kind of, I knew this had to be my number one, even if it's not my most favorite of them. It had to be. It's the most
of the cast.
It's
basically
the most Bad Momsiest movie since Bad Moms. But legit, I love this movie. This is when, whatever you want to call them, the Judd Apatow gang was putting out movies every 3 months, it seemed, and every one of them was great. This was in that time frame. This was Jason Segel getting his shot as a leading man, and you know, he wrote it. Really, really good. It's a rom-com. It's a raunchy rom-com, but there's more to it than that because the characters are really, really good. You have Jason Segel, who's going through the breakup, the getting dumped. Mila Kunis is just the right place, right time girl. Russell Brand, whose character was so good, they made a movie based around him.
That's when you know you've written a great character, is when he's such a... He's not a huge part of Sarah Marshall.
Every
but
scene he's in.
Yeah, he's so good that he gets his own spinoff movie.
That was great. Paul Rudd in his small parts, Bill Hader in his small part, Jonah Hill, I think, is great in this movie. Like, it's one of those to where every small part adds up.
They all steal the movie somehow?
Yeah, like, it's one of those to where every scene is just the best scene of the movie. And then the angle of writing the play, this unique-ass play that led to Segel doing the Muppets movie. There's a lot of layers to this movie, and it's funny. My problem with a lot of rom-coms is that this is going to be so weird, and I'm going way on some sort of tangent that I don't know what's happening. But love is like this real emotion that I feel like in rom-coms, it's just used as a plot device to where the decisions they make in a lot of rom-coms don't really matter. But yet in this one, it's legit. You have Segel who's hurting, you know, and you have him who has to watch his girlfriend be with this other guy. And then you have him kind of meet this other girl. And it's like, is he ready to move on? And you legit don't know through that movie who he's going to end up with and who he's better off with. Because there is real pain. And I feel like the pain and the hurt that is involved in love is kind of shoved aside in a lot of rom-coms just for the sake of laughs. But this goes the other way, and this exploits it for the,
I mean,
for
yeah,
the
that,
laughs.
That, the first scene, I think that's sort of a microcosm of Segel as a performer. He will commit to the bit. Going full Dio is committing to the bit. And it's still like, pardon the pun, his character there is so exposed. That's raw, watching his feelings get absolutely crushed. And he's great at that. I mean, he writes that well. I do love that part of his writing. We saw it quite a bit in The 5-Year Engagement, which I like a lot too. And again, it's in that movie, you're not really sure who he should be with, if he should end up going ahead and marrying this girl or not. But this is my number one too, so we'll just keep rolling for many of the same reasons. I actually really do. This is my favorite movie on the list.
Oh, same here.
So I certainly didn't put it up here just because it has those two young ladies in it, but I do like it that much. I actually talk a lot about, because it is, I mean, it's Jason Segel's movie. It's his chance to kind of lead. But I think Kristen Bell, I think, is really good in this movie. She does that kind of like straight-laced bitch thing very, very well. She's kind of like a straight man.
She's this actress, like this famous actress that gets anything she wants, and they still made her human. So it's like what this actress that you envision has everything in the world, like what they're like without the paparazzi cameras. And I thought that was a really cool angle that they took with her, and where she's dating some sound guy,
right,
and then dumps him for a rock star. So, I mean, there's a lot to it. There was a lot there.
Her character was great, and Mila Kunis has got comedic chops. I liked her in this because she wasn't trying to, like, she was just a girl. Could have been any girl.
She was just a girl that worked at the hotel.
Yeah.
And that's what she felt like. There was nothing flashy about her. There was nothing.
She didn't have to be like the hot movie star.
No.
That was somebody else.
Yeah, there was nothing spectacular about
her. She was the girl next door in this movie.
She was the girl next door that was there when you needed somebody, but yet you're too dumb and hurt to kind of see it. And the dynamic was really good. Like, it was a triangle movie that I didn't think played the triangle aspect for laughs or for plot purposes. Like, it was just there.
In some cases, it almost felt like it was not necessarily a triangle, but it was like two sides of a square competing against each other. And I love that scene in the hotel, the noise off or whatever you want to call that, but where they're each having sex and trying to be louder than the other one and more or less just making the noises. But I thought the movie was wonderful. I like things that he writes. I like things that he acts in. I love the first Muppets movie. Did not care for the second one.
No, second one was terrible.
Right.
Second one was really bad.
Yeah.
I don't know if the days of Siegel leading movies is kind of, if we've passed that, because Sex Tape was his last, like, major one.
I think he wrote that, too.
He did write that, yeah. Which is disturbing, because that, I'll be honest, I didn't see it. Maybe there's some better laughs,
you know,
than I expected.
I don't think the days of him are leading movies.
I mean, he did that David Foster Wallace movie,
right.
But that was...
But he has that Netflix movie that I've been hyped about and talking about every week, The Discovery. That, I think, is going to be phenomenal. It's him and Rooney Mara, I believe.
My favorite Mara. Oh, wait, no, I like Kate.
Yeah.
My second favorite Mara.
Right.
Well, non-Steeler-related Mara. My second favorite
Giants
female.
Giants-related Mara.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's
non-NFL-related.
It's definitely a top five Mara.
Fair enough. I don't think he's going anywhere, but I do like him as a leading man.
Oh, I don't think he's going anywhere, yeah.
And I think if we, you know, we have movies that Andy Dwyer is going to be a superhero or lead Jurassic Park, we can have Jason Segel lead movies. And Paul Rudd is in there. They're all in that same kind of, like, they're funny, they're charming, but they, you know, they can be dramatic when they have to.
And that's where Judd Apatow, that big boom of his movies where he burst on the scene with 40-Year-Old Virgin, which gave Seth Rogen a chance to not just be in movies, but show what he can write with Superbad, which blew up, which Jason Segel spins off and writes his own movie. And Jonah Hill just goes from these silly comedies to Oscar
Jonah
nominee.
Freaking Hill, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, it's so much. And when movies like Forgetting Sarah Marshall come out, that's good for everybody. That's one of the problems I have with the Wachowskis, is if this movie fails, that hurts a lot more people. Because Jason Segel isn't your traditional Hollywood leading man. He's not the kind of guy that you're reaching out to lead in rom-coms. He's the, generally, traditionally speaking, he would be the boyfriend. He'd be the Baxter in a movie. But this gives him a chance to go front and center and show off his writing chops and acting, and it just led to all that. Even Danny McBride got a movie out of it, which I thought was fantastic, but that one kind of bombed. But, like, when movies like this do well, that's good for everybody. Like, when movies like the Danny McBride one don't do well, that hurts everybody. But in that run of them, Danny McBride was really the only one that, Your Highness, that's, like, the only one that was
that
really...
That Sword and Sandal movie.
Yeah, I love that movie so much. That's, like, the only one that was really, like, a failure. So, I mean... This came out of one of my favorite times of movies and is one of my favorites from that time of movies. I mean, I feel like the Rat Pack was the whatever they're called. Brat Pack in the 80s. Like, this is similar to that, where the movies have their own uniqueness, even though they're different voices. There's that common string that holds them all together. And this is one of them. And I love, like, all of those
movies. Yeah, I mean, it's not a Judd Apatow directed movie. Mm. But
it has a feel like
it feels like it belongs in that universe.
Yeah. Like this, Superbad, Your Highness, Get Him to the Greek, obviously the sequel, but like Knocked Up, 40-Year-Old Virgin, they all feel like a family. And I love that about it.
Certainly, we do love that.
Did you have also rans?
Did I have also rans? Yeah, I guess my also rans almost exclusively consist of Mila Kunis movies, because Ted certainly was one. I really like that. I left it off just because it made a ton of money, and I felt like, people know about Ted.
Do they know about Ted too, though?
He's coming again. I don't know if people do know that. But I liked The Book of Eli, which certainly she was
in.
Yeah, well, yeah, I would say that when people think about that movie, I think that she's one of the people that you think of. Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead was an also-ran that I had kind of left off. So, you know, I guess those three were kind of like the three. Those were kind of the closest to actually making the list. I didn't really have any Jada Pinkett Smith that I left on the floor or Christina Applegate.
I did have a Jada Pinkett Smith that I left off just so it wasn't three Jada Pinkett Smith movies. Reign Over Me, the Mike Binder movie with Adam Sandler and Don Cheadle. Love that movie.
You mean the 9/11 movie?
Yeah. I know I've ranted about that before. The movie that was marketed as a 9/11 movie that mentions 9/11, like, briefly. She was good as John Cheadle's wife. Like, it's a Sandler and Cheadle movie, but she's so key in there. The Boss, which I know I just talked about at the halftime show. Kristen Bell and Melissa McCarthy, I loved. Veronica Mars movie from last year, a couple of years ago.
I'm surprised that one didn't make it.
It was close,
somewhere.
But I wanted to represent everybody. If Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead wasn't there, it would have been Veronica Mars. But I wanted to throw Applegate a bone because I didn't know if you would. And just because I have girls frozen.
Yeah, fair enough.
I have to. Even though I've never seen the whole thing from beginning to end, but I've seen the whole movie in pieces.
Like Mars Attacks.
Like Mars Attacks.
Pieces that don't quite fit together. Next week, our list will fit together a lot easier.
Episode 4 years. Wait, is that Keaton?
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, you keep going.
Yeah. I'm not really going to be able to cheat and put it's an actor list, so I can't put another actor in there. Certainly, I will put movies that actor doesn't star in, but I do have some that are, in fact, starring Michael Keaton, as he will be the focus of next week.
This episode's like 4 years in the making, because I love Michael Keaton. I love 80s Keaton. And when we first started doing like list-centric episodes, and we'd like, oh, we could do actors occasionally. Like, one of the first names I came up with, like, we got to do a Keaton episode. And we're just now getting around to doing it. So
we're very busy.
Lots of stuff going on. Team Movies on Up. But I am stoked for next week. We're going to talk about a lot of Michael Keaton's greatest work. So until next week,
keep it up.
Did I host that one or did you?
Technically, I did.
Okay. I didn't know, because usually when I host, I forget, and then you end up sending us out, and then I feel bad because it's like, oh, that's just me doing a poor job. So on this one, I thought, shit, I think I hosted this one, so I don't want Ryan to like close it out because that makes me look like a terrible host. But then I guess I didn't host that one.
No. So you, in turn, made me look like a terrible host.
Yeah.
That's okay.